I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shocked the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Howard and forward, Jack Price in goal!
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are recording this on the evening of Wednesday, April 18th, 2018. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing this evening?
I am good, sir. We came off of, we played a good game together in the Rapids Media Cup on Friday together. That was a lot of fun. The Rapids, for those of you who haven't been following on Twitter or whatever, bring out all of the media folks, all the writers, all the photographers, all the folks from Altitude, and then a couple of players and broadcasters, and we have a really, really bad game. And we play on slightly shortened field, and Matt was in yellow, and I was in burgundy, and...
Team gold, technically.
Gold,
it was team gold,
sorry.
Against team burgundy. Yellow. We were in the secondary hits, Mark and... Pork Smith and a bunch of other people were in the burgundy and blue.
Yeah, it was great. It was the first time I ever got invited, and I played a little bit of striker, a little bit of center back, a little bit of right back. My favorite two little things were, you heard this, at least one of those directly, which was Chris Sharpie, the goalkeeper coach for the Rapids. They said, hey, we need someone to play goalkeeper. He's like, nope. I'm a forward. He had no interest in playing in goal. And then they turned to Marcelo Balboa and they were like, Cello, we need you to, you know, get up there and really rock the midfield. And he's like, nope, I'm going to stand here and be a center back. I don't want to run. So what? Any other nice little tidbits you got from the media game that were a lot of fun?
Well, I realized about 5 minutes into the game, we didn't really have a formation. Team Burgundy spent about 3-4 minutes talking about tactics. Team Gold spent about 30 seconds talking about it, and I think we were supposed to be in a 4-3-3, and I realized very quickly that I was the only person playing on the right side.
Yeah.
So imagine Marlon Hairston being on an absolute island against three other people, only being a lot slower, a lot better, a lot worse first touch, and being short and white. And that's basically what I was facing. And in general, I don't mind being a right back. That's, you know, the position that I've played, you know, throughout my brief and very, you know, non-decorated career, Mark. But it's really, really demoralizing when you're wide. There's nobody within 20 yards of you. And the minute the team gets the ball, you're hustling up the field to facilitate possession to get the counterattack going. And two passes later, somebody in the middle who hasn't been running all game completely gives up the ball. And now you're out of position and your side is completely wide open and you've got to hustle back and do that. So
yeah, I filled in at right back too, and I'm really not in good enough shape to be filling in. I mean, I coach little kids, so I run around at practice, and I jog a little, but other than that, I was not up for right back. And you know, somewhere right after the half, I was like, wow, my lungs are tingling and burning in a very unfamiliar way. This could be like pulmonary failure, or it could just be that I'm out of shape. I'm not sure. So yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I think both of us would like to throw a shout out to the Colorado Rapids for doing that. You know, it's really nice when you write a lot to kind of just be, I guess, sort of thanked for the work that you do with a free jersey, which is totally cool. And Matt, the other thing, I think it's always something you think about, which is like, you know, you kind of think like, oh, the team is doing a really cool thing for me. It kind of curries favor with the writers. Am I going to go softer on them if they lose 7 games in a row? Probably not, but maybe I'll change. Maybe if there's one word there that's incredibly harsh, maybe I'll soften it by like, you know, half an adjective. You know what I mean? Like, Maybe I'll be a little bit nicer.
No, I don't pull any. I don't save any punches. I'm going to ask you the tough questions, and I'm going to bring you the hard-hitting and much-needed criticism that I think is needed in soccer and in sports right now. So you know that's not gonna soften any of my things, so to speak.
I'm going to
unlike how I was in the two chances I had at the near post in the first half.
Let me tell you, Matt. I rewatched the Twitter video of that and of the whole game, and you have they replayed the moment where you fall down making a good swing at the ball, and I gift it. I like cut it out and made a gif, and then I was like, ooh, I'm gonna put this up on Twitter. And I looked at it.
I will end this podcast right now, Mark.
I was like, you know,
unfollow, blocked.
It's kind of funny, but mostly it's just mean. Mostly it's just mean, and I'm not gonna do it.
Okay. Did the Twitter audio catch the language that I had for myself in the aftermath of my flub?
No, you looked thoroughly unhappy though, and okay. I could tell by your face in the video that like posting it on the internet again would have gone over poorly for me.
Okay, in any case, enough things that I am upset about. Mark, we have some more happy things to talk about when it comes to Colorado Rapids land. This past Saturday, the Rapids played to a 2-0 victory over Toronto FC. I would call a Toronto FC B-plus team at the absolute best. 2 minutes in, Jack Price gets an opportunity off of a cross from Kip Colby that gets disrupted, and Jack Price buries it into the bottom far corner. The Rapids continue to dominate the game. They play a little bit back and forth and maybe give Toronto some opportunities, but don't let them create anything dangerous. Jay Chapman had a few opportunities, but really nothing that was truly ever going to trouble the back line and Tim Howard. And then in the 77th minute, Dominic Badji wins a pretty solid PK in the second half, right after Skelshen Gashi comes on. And Badji, I think, being a consummate teammate, gives Gashi the PK and he converts it. Gashi's first appearance of the season, his first goal of the season. And then just minutes later, Yannick Bolli steps on an overall solid performance from the entire team. Some good work from the substitutes overall. Mark Goodman, what was your good thing from the Rapids getting their second win of the game, and more importantly, 3 points that not a whole lot of Western Conference teams will be getting this season on the Reds?
There were so many good things. Essentially, I think the thing that was most impressive about the Rapids is their ability to drive through the midfield. That was something we hadn't seen a lot of, and you know, I think that that was a product of game states. When you're chasing the game and you're down 1-0, you are working really hard to move the ball up the field. It means your midfield, so this happened, I think, a lot for TFC Junior, which is what I thought of that team. You gave them a B-plus team. I think I gave them a B-minus team.
That's
fair. They had five players playing, start getting their first start. They called up three players from TFC 2, one of whom started. And this was crazy. I don't know if Rapids fans picked this up. Jason Hernandez had been cut by the team at the end of last season after they won MLS Cup. They signed him 2 days before the game off of free agency. Dude hadn't, I mean, maybe he was like working out with the reserve team, but like 34-year-old Puerto Rican center back. And they just signed him and started him. That's crazy. And not surprisingly, he didn't look super great out there. But anyhow, point being, once the Rapids were up 1-0, it meant that TFC was pushing those midfield three up higher, and it meant that Colorado could get behind them a lot quicker. So you saw the Rapids getting into dangerous spots. Typically, they were also kind of launching balls to the corners, playing accurate long balls too. So really impressive ability to get all the way to that back line and put constant pressure on TFC throughout the game. Matt, what was your good thing?
Healthy bodies. We saw a lot of people return from in the lineup in this game. We had, not that he was particularly effective, but Jack McBean, any issues that he had with concussion-like symptoms were not affecting him whatsoever. I reported last week that Enzo Martinez had a little bit of a lower body injury concern that had the team take precautions to where he was not starting in the game at FC Dallas. Enzo Martinez starts in this game, was an absolute engine, tenacious player in the midfield, goes 79 minutes, and then the big guns are finally getting healthy and getting productive. Skelshen Gashi with his first appearance and his first goal, 21 minutes for him. Yannick Bolli with 11 minutes. They've now had a good full 2 weeks, each of them individually and collectively. Bolli said after the game that he was really happy with where he's at, still feeling a little bit of the altitude, but for him, he feels like he's on track. I think, you know, after, you know, as cantankerous as the offseason was for this team, is how many moving parts there were going on, how many players came in late into preseason whatsoever. I think we're finally getting to the point where in the next week or two, we have a fully healthy and trending towards, I'd say, a fully armed and operational Colorado Rapids battle station. And I think we saw the infancy of that. And overall, you know, even without the goal, I thought Gashi made a couple of really good runs offensively and defensively. I like some of the ball movement and the few touches that Yannick Bolli had. We'll get to this when we get to my bad thing initially, but really impressed with how Dylan Serna has embraced his role as being an outside back, and then also just what he was able to do coming into the game and creating some opportunities and really getting into that role when in previous iterations of this team, he kind of hasn't had a defined role or hasn't been able to stick.
Yep, agree with all that.
Okay, Mark, let's get to the bad things. Not a whole lot of bad things to talk about, you know, a 2-0 win over last year's Supporters Shield winner, but what are you taking away that maybe the Rapids need to improve on, or what didn't go well?
There wasn't a lot. I mean, you know, I think that the fundamental question that a lot of fans have is, why is Jack McBean back in the lineup? Joe Mason was hurt. He was announced early in the day as having an injury. Yannick Bolli probably wasn't fit. I think that there are a lot of other options as a second striker that Colorado could have gone with, but I think the devil you know is better than the devil you don't for Anthony Hudson. So that's, I guess, the only, and the other thing is that obviously, you know, this was a B team lineup. This wasn't a very good team. This was like, you know, if I really wanted to be harsh, I could say this was like a USL quality lineup.
Yeah.
And so on some level, maybe the Rapids should have torn these guys limb from limb. We'll get to this in the Ask HTHLs later, but another, you know, bad is relative here, but Dominic Baggi was shut out. He had 4 shots on goal. He also was knocked down in the box twice. One time, Baldomero Toledo didn't call it a penalty, and in the second half, he did call it a penalty. Baggi's 2 shots in the first half were both sharp and dangerous and saved by Clint Irwin. And his 2 shots in the second half, one was wide, but barely, and one was a kind of a botched header. So if I wanted to be harsh, I could say Baggi wasn't clinical on this day, and he probably should have had at least 1, maybe 2 other goals. But if you look at the math, which is something I covered in Backpass this week, the math says he's still scoring above average for what he should be doing. He's been, you know, it's feast or famine for strikers. You know, in his hat trick game, he hit a bunch of low percentage shots, you know, and that's the nature of the beast. If you're going to take a lot of shots, some really low percentage ones will go in and some really high percentage ones will be knocked away by the goalkeeper. And so maybe that's just what it was this week, but I definitely did feel like, well, we don't want to see too many clunkers like this from Baggi. We want to see him finish to the corners more often. So I guess the strikers could have been more clinical. Matt, do you have a bad thing?
Before we get to my bad things, I have a totally petty hypothetical question for you on that note, Mark. If Baggi picks up the ball, puts it into the center spot, and bangs it in for a PK, are we even remotely talking about the fact that Baggi didn't score?
I still think so, because I pay – that's my predilection. I don't like set pieces, free kicks, or PKs in terms of how I think of them. Like, when I think of the beautiful game, like, if a team won over another team 3-0 and it was all on set pieces, I don't know that I'd feel as enthusiastic about it as – if they did it from the run of play. I certainly wouldn't feel that way if they'd scored all the goals off of PKs. Even though a PK is a legitimate and important part of the game. You know, if you get knocked out of the box, you deserve the PK. But it doesn't feel as sexy to me to talk about. So it's very important to me that if Baggi's going to go 0-for-4 from the field, he goes 0-for-4 from the field. Do you feel like he erases the narrative if he's the guy taking the PK and he hits it?
No, I think just optic-wise, everybody looks at the score sheet and says, oh, Baggi scored. Baggi continues to play really well.
You're probably right.
I was totally fine with him giving up the PK to Gashi. I'm one of those people, you know, albeit as a right back who never drew a whole lot of PKs and definitely didn't take any. I'm the believer that, you know, whoever draws it has the right to say this is mine, so to speak, you know, unless it's like Tim Howard drawing something and, you know, he's playing with Cristiano Ronaldo, so to speak, but I was fine with it, absolutely. I agree with your constructive criticism of Baji, but I would say overall, he's still creating a whole bunch of dangerous opportunities, and I think on another, you know, on another day, you know, the day where he got the hat trick, I think we're talking about Baji getting a brace and the Rapids winning this game 4-0 handedly.
Yeah, I mean, you're also right in the sense that, like, if you watch a lot of soccer and you have to, like, make decisions about it, so, like, for Around MLS, the website that I'm the assistant editor for, you know, co-whatever editor-in-chief, we do a player of the week and a team of the week. And I don't watch every game in Major League Soccer, so, like, how do I figure out who was the next best player in Major League Soccer?
You watch the highlights or look at the stat sheet.
You can do a little stats. I use fantasy because it's important because it evaluates, especially for defenders. Like, you don't want to just... I mean, the default position for defenders is, did a center back score a goal this week?
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll put them on the team. But, you know, like, a good example this week was Portland won 3-2. They played like garbage. They gave up some soft goals. Alvis Powell committed a horrendous foul, but he also scored a goal and an assist. If I were just looking at the numbers, if I'm just looking at the stats, Powell makes the team sheet for, you know, starting 11 of the week. But I saw that foul, so I didn't. So it's a question. Like, do you just look at the numbers? I try not to. I try to watch as much soccer as I can. Mm-hmm. I probably watched less soccer this week than MLS soccer than I normally do. I usually catch 2 MLS games and 2 USL games a weekend. And if I'm if my kids are behaving, I can catch an EPL game also. So, mm-hmm. How much soccer do you watch on a given weekend?
I probably do.
How much do you obligatorily do for Last Word on soccer?
Obligatory for Last Word is usually Rapids, Galaxy, if there's not a whole lot of overlap. But we have another Galaxy writer who covers it in the event that there's any or significant amount of overlap, and then usually the national TV game. So let's say you have a typical weekend where the Rapids have a 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time kickoff. I'll usually catch at least one, maybe two of the earlier games before that kickoff, and then let's say, you know, two or, you know, however many there are on the Sunday.
So what's an excessive weekend for you? Like, what's your all-time best number of games watched in a given weekend?
Number of games watched in a given weekend? Are we including...
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Are we including just MLS, or are we including Premier League and late kickoff?
Everything.
0 to 90 minutes, or just games that I watch a significant portion of?
I'll say 45 minutes or more.
45 minutes or more. What about if we're doing, like, multi-screen?
Answer the question!
Answer the question.
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth, Mark! I'd say... I'd have to go back and think about it, or, like, think about the overlap of the schedule, but I'd say easily double digits.
Yeah. Wow.
So if you're thinking, if you think maybe, like, a Friday night MLS game, say a Friday night MLS game, another Friday Liga MX game, maybe a random night game against the EPL, maybe one or two EPL games in the morning, transition that into 3 back-to-back-to-back MLS games, say another Premier League game on Sunday, and then another back-to-back of MLS, so to speak. I get easily at 10, maybe I could have cracked 15 at some point.
You got me beat. I think I topped out at either 8 or 9, and that's usually on Saturday morning. I will watch, before I go to synagogue, I'll usually catch the early EPL game, and then I'll catch a Bundesliga game. Then I'll go to synagogue, I'll come back and catch the early MLS game, the Rapids game, and a USL game. So now I've hit 5. And then on Sunday, I'll catch 1 or 2 national games. And then if there was an EPL game early in that morning, I'll catch 1. And that none of that counts if I'm coaching that day. So, like, this last weekend, I coached a game on Saturday for my U8 and a game on Sunday. We almost won the game on Sunday. We were in it. Game on Saturday, we played a whole bunch of boys with mohawks, and they murdered us.
Oh, boy.
So it was bad. We lost, like, 11-0. It was horrendous. Always watch out for the team full of mohawks. All right, you got a big thing?
Okay. Well, we didn't even get to my bad thing, Mark. One other thing that I have to address on that front, I'm going to have to disagree with you on behalf of Ginger MLS Twitter on your view on set pieces. Myself, Alexi Lawless, Dax McCarty, and Andrew King are firmly on the opposite end of that side. Hashtag set piece orgy. Moving on. Okay, so my bad thing, Mark, I don't know if anybody noticed this just because the Rapids ended up winning, but the Rapids made a sub in the first half, and it was, I can't get the minute right now, in the 39th minute, Kip Colvey came out.
Yes.
For Dylan Cerna. We talked about it last week where Colvey was very unimpressive against FC Dallas, and then looking at his heat map, I would say on both sides of the ball equally unsuccessful, inaccurate, and disengaged, both defensively and offensively. Asked Hudson about it in the press game, and he said just a tactical change now. But for those of you who've been listening to interviews with him or have been paying attention to my or Mark or anybody else's coverage, Hudson doesn't like to single out players either with praise or constructive criticism on this one, but fundamentally Kip Colvey has not cut it for me this season, and in both of, I think, his now three substitute appearances at the position, I've liked more what I've seen from Dylan Cerna. I think as long as Marlon Harrison is unavailable due to his cartilage recovery, we'll talk a little bit about that from Field 20.
It's difficult to know. So I wrote a whole section, almost half of Back Pass was on exactly that question, because I was fascinated exactly when you asked the question in the press conference, you know, and Hudson said it was a tactical decision. I was fascinated by that. So I went back and I watched Kip Colvey very closely, and you can read it in Back Pass, but you know, I don't know if you're right or if I'm right. Your take is Kip Colvey wasn't good enough. And I think that's possible. My read was Kip Colvey was subbed intentionally. That there was a decision intentionally by Hudson going into the game to play a right-footed right back and then to switch him with a left-footed player later. It's possible there wasn't. He had a couple moments early where he made a couple choices where Hudson yelled at him, but from like minute 20 to minute 38, he did a lot of really good things. He played a really nice ball into Baji for Baji's first shot, and he also made a couple of really good runs where he got on the end of it or the play was over his head. If you want to hear more about that, check out Back Pass. But we can agree to disagree on this one, whether, and also we don't really know. I kind of wanted to ask Hudson about it, but I kind of knew that he wasn't going to answer that question any further than he already did.
Yeah, I mean, I guess just from what we've seen from the two players at their respective position, and granted, you know, Cerna's never really been in this role, save for, you know, that random Open Cup game against the switchbacks where he's put out as outside back, so to speak. And we, you know, Colvey, you know, hasn't had a whole lot of MLS minutes prior to this one. Cerna's faster. I think he brings a little bit more both in possession and service into the box from the outside. I'm not convinced of either of them defensively. So if you're not, right, if you're going to have a wingback that's questionable defensively, right, you might as well have somebody who can contribute something.
And he's left-footed. Sort of cuts in on his left really, really well, and everybody knows that. But he didn't really get a chance to do it until like the 75th in that game. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. It's a bummer that Eric Miller isn't available. Miller's been hurt the last couple of weeks, because for me, Miller's the best choice at right back, especially if you already have a 1-0 lead. But
I would agree.
We can move on.
And then my other bad thing that I have, again, yellow cards. I believe only two of them handed out in this game, both to Rapids players, one to Dominic Baji, and now his fourth game is Jack Price. I think he's certainly recovered from, you know, he made good on, you know, not getting the PK, converting on the PK in New England. He scored the goal this week. I like what he does in possession. I like what he does defensively and from an organizational standpoint, Mark, but yellow cards are a game of attrition, and right now he is accumulating them at a borderline record rate. As far as
we asked about it in the press conference, and we asked Hudson, you know, how do you feel about Jack Hudson racking up his fourth card? And Hudson's response was pretty, we all laughed pretty good at it. It was basically like, yeah, I wish he hadn't have done that. It was something to
he
the
said, I wish he hadn't have done that, but I appreciate the tenacity.
Yeah.
There are elements of it that I like.
And I agree. I think, you know, Jack Price clattering around and bashing dudes over is, you know, hashtag Rapids thug life. Going back, it's an old school Burgundy Wave thing. We used to have the thug cast from back when the Rapids were really well known as a team that was going to stomp on you in the midfield and kick you in the boot.
Yeah, the Jeff Lorenowitz days.
Yeah. They were hardcore, and I don't know that. I mean, I like those guys, but I feel like those days are well and truly dead.
That was MLS 1.0. So that was my other bad thing. Just really quickly, Mark, what was your big thing from this game?
My only big thing is that the Rapids are on a 4-game undefeated streak, and they're undefeated at home, and these are all, I think fans are starting to start to see that this is a trend and not a hiccup. And that's a big thing. It's really nice to start to say this team is a strong team and will surprise people. The other piece that's a big thing is they score goals. It's the whole mirage. People thought that the whole thing of us being an offensive team was a mirage, and a goal-scoring team is a mirage, and it seems like it's true. It seems like this team scores goals. They are in the upper half of the Western Conference in goals scored, and that's big. Do you have a big thing?
I'm going to sound like a broken record from last week on the pod, my writing and Twitter this week, and, you know, as I teased a little bit about before, you know, after the Toronto FC has a game against Houston this weekend, they've already come out and said they're going to send a B squad and focus on CCL.
For sure.
But regardless of what happens next Wednesday at the Estadio Akron, Toronto, whether they win or lose, Toronto is going to be done with CCL, and they're going to turn their focus. Their, you know, the big angry red monster is going to turn its head to MLS play. Half of the Western teams in the Western Conference are going to play Toronto FC at BMO Field. The other half are going to get them at home. We saw what a fully operational Toronto FC was able to do against RSL a couple weeks ago on a Friday, in which they won, I believe, 3-1 or 3-0, and it was not close at all. So most of those Western Conference teams that the Rapids are competing with for playoff spots are going to go to BMO Field and lose, and lose handedly, as far as goal differential is concerned. Some of the ones that play on the road are going to be able to pick up a couple of draws. I would say very few of those teams at home against Toronto FC this season are going to be able to pick up wins in the context of getting points where your opponents are not going to get points that are going to make, that's going to make the difference in qualifying for the playoffs. The Rapids got 3 points where the vast majority of their competition will not get 3 points, and most of them will be lucky to get one. I don't care that it was against a B team whatsoever. Mm-hmm. 3 points against, you know, a USL playoff team counts the exact same as 3 points at Atlanta against their completely healthy squad, so to speak. So, you know, I think an expected result for the Rapids, but a much needed 3 points. And if this is the difference between them making the playoffs, then, you know, lucky for the schedule, and they took care of business when they absolutely needed to. Moving on, Mark, we've got a big weekend this weekend, don't we?
It's the Rocky Mountain Cup at Rio Tinto.
Colorado Rapids will be taking on Real Salt Lake for the first time this season. Mark, we are now looking at the points. We are now 6/34 way through the season. That results to 3/17. The Rapids have only played 5 games. I was looking at RSL. Excuse me. We are 5/34 way through the season. The Rapids have 8 points. Real Salt Lake are 2-3-1 on the season. They have 7 points on 6 games played. I'm assuming, since most of you are diehard Rapids fans, I don't need to recap overall who RSL is as a team. Mike Pecky is in his first full season as manager. His second season took over midway through last year. They've got Luis Silva. They've got Albert Rusnak, who is a really good player from the Czech Republic. They've got Joao Plata, who's really, really small and really, really fast. In defense, they've got Justin Glad, who's their big homegrown center back. And then, of course, they've got big Nick Raimondo at 5'9" in goal, and then Kyle Beckerman at holding midfield. But Mark, RSL has not been good this season. The old core seems to be aging. We know Mike Pepke has never really is a good motivator, but he's not the best tactical person in terms of figuring things out. And when you've got a team that's lost a couple rough games, you know, they got whacked by LAFC about a month ago by a score of 5-1 at the Riot, so to speak, and they haven't really been able to get their confidence back. You know, Mike Pecky can do a good job with the confidence side, but there's tactical issues that they're handling, and they haven't really figured themselves out yet. The Croatian midfielder who they brought in, Damir Krylach, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, has not been good, in my personal opinion. This is a team that is struggling right now, a team that is looking for their identity, and a team that is very much susceptible for the Colorado Rapids to get 3 points on this one. What's your take on the Rocky Mountain Cup 2018 and the opponent the Rapids are facing this Saturday?
Colorado's definitely on the front foot in this one. They look like the better team. It's all bets are off when it comes to a grudge match like this, and I also think that RSL have been probably worse. If you just look at goal difference, worse than advertised, worse than you would really actually expect. If you just look at goal differential, they look awful. They've given up 14 goals this season, bottom of the Western Conference, while only scoring 6. That's really kind of exacerbated by 3 really bad losses. They lost to LAFC 5-1. They lost to Toronto 3-1, and they lost to NYFC last week on a Wednesday match 4-0. And you know, the reality of when you get behind by one, you chase that goal, and that means you open yourself up. And then you get behind by 2, and you really chase that goal. And then you're demoralized, and your defense feels kind of like questioning their own self-worth. And so then you get turned inside out for that 4th or that 5th goal. So that's a little bit of maybe what's going on there. So I wouldn't imagine that Colorado will go in there and score buckets of goals. But, you know, it's really hard to tell what's really going wrong with RSL. Rusnak is better. He's got Brooks Lennon, who's really speedy, dribbly, technical, dangerous. João Plata's not really turned it on like he has in the past, although I think he's their leading goal scorer with 2. You know, they're still looking for a center forward also, I think. They were playing a 4-3-3 for the last couple seasons, with Beckerman doing the holding job. And Beckerman, as of even last season, was still doing a good job as a holding mid. You know, you might think he was slow, but the numbers that I looked at said that he was making more defensive actions on average than most other defensive midfielders in soccer, and he was still spraying the ball around with better accuracy than most defensive midfielders in Major League Soccer. So, you know, I would say rumors of Beckerman's demise are exaggerated, but he is 1 year on from last year, and he is still not getting the kind of level of support that he really needs to. So it's really hard to say that they're as bad as they have been, but also there isn't probably a light at the end of this tunnel for RSL, and if it is, it's an oncoming train. They're not likely to be or to get better significantly. They are a 7th, 8th, 9th place team in this conference unless they make some serious changes. Do you see anything that I haven't kind of called out or anything that you'd like to highlight about this team?
I would say that oncoming train is Dominic Baggi splitting the center backs and Nick Romano going, oh crap, what's about to happen, Mark? I look at RSL and they're a team that doesn't know who they are or what they're supposed to be. Sporting Kansas City comes into Dick's Sporting Goods Park. We know what type of a team Peter Vermees has. You know, there are coaches in MLS who are well-defined in terms of what they want to do. Vancouver Whitecaps, you know, we know what they're going to be. They're going to sit and they're going to bunker. They're going to try and create quick turnovers in the midfield and then counter on you. We know very clearly from his past coaching jobs and what he's done so far with the Rapids, the type of team that Anthony Hudson is aspiring to turn the Rapids into. Mike Petke's good at a number of different things. He's good at, from a man-manager standpoint, from motivating young players and getting them into the first team, from being, you know, that good club representative. You know, he's not going to, other than, you know, hand him out Trey, you know, he's going to do things. He's the type of coach that you would want. I'm talking myself into saying that he's like Pablo Mascherani, where he is going to get everybody in the locker room to run through a wall for him. They're going to be completely dedicated, but really, you know, tactically, like, what was his plan when he was at the New York Red Bulls? It was, we're going to be gutsy defending, we're going to be chippy in the midfield, we're going to get the ball to Thierry Henry and hope that he and Bradley White Phillips can bang in a goal, so to speak. That worked when he had a bunch of talent and some MLS veterans and some international power and a good money budget in terms of, you know, getting a supporter shield that never worked in the playoffs or in the U.S. Open Cup for him. And, you know, I think I want to say that RSL were a darling last season, so to speak, but they had such a bad start to the year. They were ravaged from the injuries. Mike Petke comes in midseason. They win a couple games at the end of the year and say, okay, RSL's healthy. They've got a bunch of young players. Those young players are inevitably going to improve from last year to this year. They're going to be better. They're going to be a contender in the West. But really, you know, I think about a Bruce Arena team, for example. You know what that looks like, Mark. I think about what a Siggy Schmidt team looks like. I think about what a Greg Berhalter team looks like. You know, from a tactical, from a philosophical, from an approach to the game, offensively, defensively, home or away, I don't know that Mike Petke has that really ironed out, so to speak. So I'm looking at a coach who doesn't really know what he is. I'm looking at a team that doesn't really know what they are.
Yeah,
Brooks Lennon started at right back, so they don't really have an idea of who's playing. The Rapids know who they are. They know what they're supposed to do individually and collectively. Tommy Smith knows what his role is going to be on Saturday. I don't know that Krylach knows what his role is supposed to be, and given that, you know, as soon as Jason Christ left in 2013, the thought was RSL is going to be good for the next 2 to 3 years with the veteran core they have, but they need to replace it. Justin Grad is still untapped potential at the center back role. Krylach is, you know, maybe, you know, in, we're not sure what he's going to look like because he's still new to MLS. Salvarino's inconsistent. I like what I've seen from Albert Rusnak, but, you know, Jao Plata hasn't replaced the production that they lost from... Who was the Costa Rican forward they had who put up goals per 90 on the rate of, like, Robbie Keane? Who am I thinking of? Alvaro Savarino? Is that right?
Savarino's still with them, yeah, yeah. And he's still playing.
No, who am
well,
I?
Javi Mo?
Not, well, Javier, okay, I would say Albert Rusnak has, from a number 10 standpoint, has replaced Javier Morales, but I can't remember in any case. What were you going to say? I've been talking a lot.
No, I think the other pieces they haven't figured out who they're back for are defensively. You know, losing Tony Beltran at left back. He's an older guy, but he did the job. I've always been impressed with the shift that Tony Beltran puts in. I think he's out with injury, possibly for the season, and they haven't really filled him in yet. Justin Glad was supposed to be the next coming, and he hasn't been that great. He's been exploited a number of times, and they've got a bunch of guys who've been rotating in and out. Marcelo Silva, David Horst.
DeMar Phillips has been terrible.
DeMar Phillips has been bad. Sean Berry is coming in. He's like a kind of a journeyman lunch pail kind of guy, 27 years old, you know, flotsam and jetsam in, in Europe and in second division in Frankfurt and in Kielce in Poland. Like, these are not players that you bring on and you say, like, oh, you're going to hold it down and help us win the conference. These are, you know, journeyman role player squad guys, and that's a problem. You know, and this is an offensively minded Rapids team that are going to come at you. And so I think you might be right about, you know, Don Baggi picking up a goal here or two or three. It's nice to hope for. But, you know, they're going to come in really pissed off because they've been getting torn apart for the last couple weeks. So, and they'll be back home.
Javier Morales was who I was thinking of.
You said Javi Mo.
You said Javi Mo?
Yeah.
No, excuse me. Sorry, I said the wrong name. Fabian Espíndola.
Oh, yeah, Espíndola
is who I was thinking of. So I think, you know, there's a retiring, I'd say a veteran core that RSL hasn't really been able to replace. I think a lot of the young guys are still trying to fill up their role, and I think they have a head coach who hasn't really decided who they were supposed to be. RSL was at their best when they had... a good mix of a veteran core, young energetic players, and a head coach who had a well-defined system, and everybody was a cog in the machine. You know, RSL, you know, it's the team is the star, so to speak,
yeah.
And right now I'm looking at a bunch of unmatched puzzle pieces.
Yeah, I wonder how much leash Mike Petke is going to get this season. I'd like to think that he gets a full season, at least, and then the retooling starts, you know, when they go through the summer window and for next year, that they know what they've got right now, which is Albert Rusnak and an island of misfit toys. But we'll see. We'll see if he gets that much leeway. You know, the last guy did not. So.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see what happens with them come this Saturday when the Rapids take them on at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, I believe.
Correct.
Okay, moving on, Mark. You were at training this week. What do you have updates for us from Field 20?
I would say, and this is going to be maybe the most interesting thing we say tonight because it's a little bit of rumor mill. All eyes of all of the media who are in the know were on Stefan Agner. And the reason is, and this was a rumor that was floated, I heard it from multiple sources, and it's also appeared in the Facebook group for the Colorado Rapids, that last week Stefan Agner had a very visible blow-up with Coach Anthony Hudson, that there was shouting involved, and Agner left practice before training was over.
I can confirm that happened, Mark. I was there for that. I've been kind of holding on to that, so to speak, but that did occur. Had a brief, I would not say anything on the record whatsoever, just asking Agner about training and everything, and he said that he wanted to excuse himself from it. So it was from that standpoint, he said it was a player decision. And then last week, Hudson said that he was available for selection for Saturday. So at this point, I would say Agner not being involved in the 18 or in the starting 11 is a coaching decision. But continue.
So this week, everybody was watching him to see how he would respond to training and how he would react. And he just played really, really hard. And everybody was noticing it on the sidelines. Everybody was noticing that Agner was working very hard. Was getting stuck in very frequently. He was possibly the most physical. And there were a couple of chuckles because there were about five academy players at practice this week. And there were at least two times where Agner just mowed a poor kid down, like some 17-year-old who just came out of Grandview High School for the day to get some training. And Agner trucked him. And we were always kind of looking there like, man, I wouldn't want to be that academy kid who has to be the chum for the Sharks. But Agner was really putting in a hard shift, and it was very clear that he was clearly trying to work his way back into the good graces of the manager. So that was really the big thing. The other piece that Abby Mood with Burgundy Wave reported was that Jack Price was jogging off to the side, was not involved in contact. And we think that that was probably, you know, just carrying a knock from the game or whatever. I'm trying to think. There was Court Ford was doing some light running also. Eric Miller came out later and did some light running, but wasn't particularly involved. And other than that, there wasn't a whole lot else of note. Everybody else was pretty much involved in full training. So the team was working on two different kinds of drills early-ish in the week. One is kind of very long and wide, swinging the ball, you know, into the corners and deep. And then they put 10 guys on a small-sided field. So very close contact, you know, short passing kind of high energy stuff. So I think they're looking to get stuck in against an RSL team that, if you look at their numbers, they've racked up a ton of yellow cards, especially in the games that they've won. So I would expect this game to be fairly physical. And we'll see how that plays out.
It would not be a Rocky Mountain Cup without it getting physical.
The other interesting things about training were just what I got, which was that I got to interview, and we're going to post this. You'll hear this dropped in a few minutes, but I got to do a lovely interview with Shkelzengashi, who is back and healthy and excited to be in the team. And he is, I'll say this, he is the most fun guy on the Colorado Rapids interview. He is so warm. He is very excited. He's extremely positive, and he is just all smiles and backslaps and handshakes and, oh, hi, Mark, great to see you again, welcome back, good to see you. You know, you feel like $1 million when you get to interview Gashi. So dude is a rock star, and fans really like him, and there's good reason for that. He is a likable dude. And I also got to interview Anthony Hudson, and that's going to drop on AroundMLS.com this Friday. So just me and him talking tactics, nobody else around, super fun.
Okay, I would say, like, if the Rapids ever had, like, a kid's summer camp, like, the bunks that get Enzo Martinez and Shkelzengashi are going to have the absolute most fun. Like the Tim Howard bunks, like, they're going to be, I'm not going to say miserable, but, like, they're going to have to be in bed at a certain time. They're going to have to be up. Like, the bathroom's got to be cleaned. No talking when they're going from activity to activity. And, like, Enzo and Gashi, like, that's the, I wouldn't say that, like, an 8-year-old, like, sleepaway camp would ever be lit. But if it ever could be lit, then I would say Shkelzengashi and Enzo Martinez would make it lit.
Enzo was great. He also came up and said hi, and some other folks were there too. I'll just add, you know, like the summer camp mascot has to be Michael Azira's son. Michael yes. Azira has, I think, a 3-year-old, and he is, oh my God, the most adorable thing in the world. So, yeah.
Okay, Mark, shall we play the audio with Skelshingashi?
Yeah, I'll lead it in. I don't know if Matt's gonna cut this or not. It's totally up to him, but we started the interview. I asked him a question. He started to answer the question, and then Richard Fleming and 4 other media folks started walking down the hall, making a lot of noise, talking, blah, blah, blah. And Gashi shushed them, stopped the interview, waited till everyone walked by, and started his question all over again. It was the greatest thing in the world. So it just goes back to the thing I said before about Gashi being a really great guy. So with no further ado, a few words between me and Skelshingashi from practice on Tuesday. Here with Skelshingashi. Gashi, you've been out for a little bit. What's it like to be back into training?
Yes, I'm very happy to be back. What's up? So, start again. So yeah, I'm very happy to be back because when you are injured. And you are coming back, you just want to enjoy the small things, like the easy things, to be on the field, to run, to pass some balls, you know. And this makes me so happy. And yeah, I'm really happy to be back. So that's easy.
It's great. So you came on last on Saturday, mm-hmm. and you got a huge reaction from the fans, you know, just a lot of cheering and screaming. And what's that feel like? What was that moment for you to know that you're a fan favorite and yeah. they appreciate you?
First, I want to just say thank you to all the fans because they gave me a lot of power, energy. So when I was to make the warm-up, when I was outside to warm-up, so the people say, Gashi, let's do it, it's your day, Gashi, we love you, Gashi, something like that. And I said, just hey, me too, I love you also, you're the best, something like that. And this gave me energy, you know, because good support, everybody, feedbacks, you're happy because you were long time injured, you came back, the people are happy to see you. And then you go on the field and you can make, you can score and you can give something back. And that's a perfect day.
So you spent a lot of time watching the team last year from mm-hmm. the sidelines. You could start at the beginning of the season watching the team from the sidelines. Exactly. It's a very different team. There's a lot of things that are different. What are some things that you kind of see that are different from last year this year?
Yeah, it was in this time when I was injured. It was also like a good thing that I can see the players because I saw a lot of games, what you can do better and what you said, like last year and this year. And then I can say, last year we do this year better, what's happening, and something like that. And for me, it's like we have higher quality. We have more players with the better IQ, football, soccer IQ, and makes much funnier. You have, because we are all on the same page. And when you have good results, it's always easier to bring the new peoples in a new team when you have your results. You know, everybody makes it much easier and or much happier. Yeah, something good. Like that.
Last one. So I kind of noted on Twitter, you scored on Saturday. Yamir Haika scored a goal for mm-hmm. San Jose. You got all these Albanians doing great things in MLS. What do you think the perception of the league is for either Albanians like you or for players who are coming over from Europe? Just in the last couple of years, how have things changed?
A big change. I think a lot of people text me, a lot of players text me, hey, can you do something to come to the MLS, something like that. I said, hey, I'm not a manager, I'm just a soccer player, you know. But what I want to say, it's like the people follow the MLS and they see that the players are happier because it's an amazing league and you have a lot of good teams, the stadiums are full, the fans are always happy, like, you know, they try to support you every time. And I think it's also good to see that when in your career you can play one time in the MLS and when you have the chance, you have to take it. And it's amazing and I'm very happy to play for the Rapids and in the MLS.
So you don't want to take any credit for getting Zlatan to Major League Soccer. That wasn't all you. You didn't do all of the Zlatan to get him here.
I think like also his movement is like a big deal for the MLS, what I said, because they say, what's Zlatan go to the MLS? And you see how he play and perform, because he said, I won't play to the MLS, what I heard. So a lot of people, they speak very good about the MLS, about the teams. So it's great. And I was happy. I think everybody's happy that he is here. But at the end, we have to be focused on our team, and we have next game. It's against Salt Lake, and we have to beat them.
It's great to have Zlatan here so you can beat him, right?
Yeah, we will see. The game is in August, so we will see what's happened. But I will give my best, and let's do it. Who is better or who can win the game? At the end, it's like not one-man show. I think we have a much better team, like with the teammates, like the team spirit. But at the end, it's like, let's see what's happened. But yeah, we are very excited.
Excellent.
Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. Great stuff from Skelshengashi, Mark. Excellent work this week in training. Moving on, we've got some Ask HGHLs for this week.
We do, as we always do. Well, sometimes we're better at asking people to ask HGHL. Sometimes people remember. If you're a listener and you have something you want to ask us, either because you're thinking about it during a game or you're listening to this podcast, and just send it whenever you can. You don't have to wait for us to prompt you on Twitter.
At Rapids96Podcast on Twitter, or if you've got something long form or aren't on the Twitter sphere, as we learned that some of our fans are not from the happy hour that we hosted on the Toronto game, Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Mark, ask HDHL.
We got two good ones this week. The first one is from David Z. He goes on Twitter as Zing Leg Tubes. He's asking, and ask HDL with a hole to think about it. Bajie missed the breakaway in the Toronto match, and I feel that that's been a regular problem I've seen in Bajie. Is he actually bad at breakaways, or are they just lower percentage shots than I expect? So it's a great question. It's also covered a little bit in Back Pass this week. I constantly have this question with expected goals. Dominic Bajie is an average finisher in MLS for the last 2 years. Last year, he scored 9 goals, and his expected goals was 9.36. I remember that right off the top of my head. This year, he has 4 goals. His expected goals for the year is 1.80, meaning he is exceeding his expected goals, even including Saturday's game, by 2.20 goals. He is a good finisher as of right now in Major League Soccer. We see him taking difficult shots and not finishing them. We see him taking shots from difficult angles and not finishing them. We see him taking difficult shots and finishing them. And we see him taking easy shots and not finishing them. And it all averages out in the wash. There's only a few players in Major League Soccer over the last couple of years who have significantly exceeded expected goals. Kyle Larin, in the 2 seasons that he absolutely blew up, his rookie and his sophomore year, exceeded expected goals by obscene, ridiculous numbers. Joseph Martinez last year, his numbers were insane.
Okay, but that's also because he had like 3 hat tricks in like a week against teams of 10 men.
David Villa typically exceeds expected goals by a fair amount, but not a ton. So it's two things.
He gets
things.
Paid millions of dollars.
Right. It's two things. Finishing is a real thing. It's not like an imaginary, you know, gnome that comes and lands on you and gives you magical powers when you finish. Finishing is a thing. Some players have a lucky year, but most players are just good at putting the ball into the corners on frame and not putting it right into the goalkeeper. But the other thing is you make your own luck, right? You get into dangerous positions to score. You know, your expected goals is 0 if you never make it into the final third on a dribble. And Bajie's incredible speed and his good touch means that he's going to make those. So he was confounded on a couple of breakaways this last week. I think the hardest thing for fans, and then I'll shut up, is it's just really easy, and I experienced this with Jared Watts and fouls and getting beat on defense. It's very easy to be colored by one critical bad experience, and it's especially easy to judge a player based on a mistake at a critical moment, right? Like, if they don't score in a must-score situation that means the game, or if they commit a bad foul in a spot where it means the game, math doesn't care, right? Math doesn't know the difference between you're up by 5 and you blow one over the bar, or you're down by 1, and it's the 89th minute, and you blow one over the bar. But fans remember that, right? Fans don't remember that you blew one over the bar when you were winning 5-0. Fans remember when you blow it in a critical situation. Math does not care. So math says that Dom Badji is a slightly above average finisher, and he gets into good positions. So I want fans who listen to the show to evangelize the masses, to tell people, you know, at least for now, you know, until Badji has a either incredibly good lucky streak or an incredibly terrible streak for the rest of the year, that you've got to watch in a very neutral way. You have to just watch all of their shots and say, you know, not is this the go-ahead goal in a critical situation, just is this a goal that he should have scored or not? Did he really Wando this one, or did he really score a cracker? And that's my kind of two cents. All right, I'm going to let Matt take the next question since I have expounded voluminously upon this theory. Never get me started on expected goals. My promise for this year, fans, is I'm going to move on and spend a fair amount of time at some point this year talking about expected passing, which is a whole new metric. And I think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, but like, I'm very excited to learn all about expected passing. Now that I've written an article for American Soccer Analysis, I feel like I owe it to them to evangelize the masses on the weird math that they're doing.
Mark, can you enough please math. Can you yeah, please stop enough trying math. To convert enough our conversion. Listeners.
Right. I'm converting yes. people with math. This is going to be the lowest rated show we've ever done. Okay. This one's for you, Matt. So Jared Thornburg, who is one of my favorites, I've mentioned this before.
Hopefully you're at the game on Saturday, Colorado Jared.
Colorado Rapids fan who lives in Utah, God bless him. Is this the year we win in Sandy? Can we make Real Salt Lake, R-E-E-L. I don't understand exactly. Maybe you can we make Real Salt Lake a thing? And I'll just add to that before you answer the question. We looked this up before this because we were like, is that right? Have the Rapids never won at Rio Tinto? And the answer is yes. The Rapids they've won at
Rice-Eccles.
At Rice-Eccles, their previous stadium. But the Colorado Rapids have never beaten Salt Lake in an MLS regular season game at the Rio T. They have 9 losses and 3 draws in 12 tries. Matt, is this the year?
Mark, I am looking at the breakdown that we have in my notepad for this game, and the next thing that we have to talk about after hashtag AskHDHL is predicting the game and then just general thoughts on the Rocky Mountain Cup, and I tease it a little bit. I'm going to say yes. I think this RSL team can absolutely be had. I think the Rapids are on a run, being 4 unbeaten. Every single one of the strikers has something good, you know, really other than Jack McBean to think about in terms of what they provided. Dominic Badji's creating chances. You know, other than Joe Mason's injury, he's looked good. Boley and Gashi are coming into fitness. I think this is a team that is absolutely ready to do it and ready to be the first Rapids team to win the Rocky Mountain Cup since, I want to say, at least since RSL was still playing at Rice-Eccles. Let me look up to see.
We won Rocky Mountain Cup in 2015, but that was on goal differential. And that one was a close one. And
okay, first
that,
team to win Rocky Mountain Cup outright since I want to say 2007, which is over a decade ago, so to speak. So I will come out and say it right now. The Colorado Rapids will defeat Real Salt Lake this Saturday at the Riot by a score of 1-0 and get me Dom Badji on the goal. And off of that, I would expect that the Rapids are more likely than not. I would be betting money right now that the Rapids win Rocky Mountain Cup 2018.
Yeah, these are two teams that have had questionable back lines at different times. So I'm going to say, and I'm going to cheat a little bit here, but my soul wants to say it's going to end 2-2, but I have a feeling, and this is a crazy prediction, that it might end 3-3. It's either going to end 2-2 or 3-3. It's going to end in a draw either way. It's a nutty prediction for a Colorado Rapids commentator to say that 6 goals might get scored in a Rapids game, but it could happen. It could happen, people. Happens like once every decade, I think. But
Mark, I don't know which question I'm more confused by. The notion that you believe that somehow the Rapids are going to score 3 goals or the notion that they're somehow going to give up 3 goals?
Well, we have conceded 2, so 3 is only 1 more than 2.
Okay. On that note, listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @LWSMattPollard and at @RapidsRyby. Check out our written audio and video content collectively at LastWordOnSoccer.com, AroundMLS.com, and American Soccer Analysis. Follow the pod on the Twitter sphere at Rapids96Podcast. You can email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com, and you can find us wherever you find your podcast. We are officially on TuneIn.com and the TuneIn app. Still working on getting on Spotify and Buzzsprout, but you can find us on a whole bunch of other places. I did tweet out a couple weeks ago from Rapids96Podcast on Twitter, saying all the platforms that we're on. So feel free to contact us if you don't like one of the platforms we're on, and you want to see what else we're available, or if we're not somewhere and you'd prefer us to get on there. Working to make this as easily and as seamlessly available to all of our wonderful listeners as much as we can. Mark, any last words on this segment?
Ding, 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 ding. Don Badgie, jump on it, jump on it, jump on it. Ding, 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 ding. Ding, ding, Don Badgie, jump on it, jump on it, jump on it. Just do it, C38, you know you want to.
Listeners, on that note, we'll see you next week.